Will you pray with me? Speak, O Lord, in these moments of stillness. Speak your words of wholeness, of unity, and of peace. And may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable to you, our rock and redeemer. Amen. A preacher's job is so much harder when Jesus contradicts himself. Did you catch that? Did you hear it in our passage today? Right there in verse 34, he says, "Do not think that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword." Hasn't Jesus heard that he is, in fact, the Prince of Peace himself? Or what about in the book of John, where he tells the very same disciples, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you"? Or does he know that in Acts, his own disciple Peter says, "You know the message he sent to the people of Israel, preaching peace by Jesus Christ. He is Lord of all." I could cite many more examples from the Gospels and the rest of the New Testament referring to Jesus and peace. Things like, "Blessed are the peacemakers," "Go in peace," "Live in peace," and of course, "Peace be with you." That's a lot of peace talk connected back to Jesus that he apparently wants nothing to do with. So what gives? I guess this means we need to roll up our proverbial exegetical sleeves and get to work to make sense of Jesus's words. Now, at the beginning of chapter 10 in Matthew, just 24 verses before we reach today's passage, Jesus sends the 12 disciples out into the surrounding countryside to share the good news that the kingdom of heaven has drawn near. They are to go from town to town, curing the sick, raising the dead, cleansing those with a skin disease, casting out demons, and bringing peace. You caught that, right? Jesus tells them, "If the house is worthy, let your peace be upon it. But if it's not worthy, let your peace return to you." In the opening verses in this chapter of Matthew, Jesus instructs his disciples on what to do and how to be. In our passage today, he warns them of what might happen to them when they show up in his name. He wants them to be aware of the troubles they might face when they are associated as his disciples. Now let's pause with the word disciple for a moment. If you want to be fancy, it's the word mathetes in Greek, the root word for the word math. A simple definition of a disciple is perhaps one who follows. But that's only part of it. An integral part of being a disciple is not just following, but also doing. Putting the teachings of the master into practice in the world. When Jesus sends his disciples out to proclaim the good news, he is asking them to fully live their status as disciple in both word and deed. And because they are disciples of Jesus, they will receive that same ridicule and name-calling that he does. But that does not negate their work. Curing, raising, cleansing, casting, and bringing peace. So why then does Jesus contradict himself? He who is the Prince of Peace tells his disciples to bring peace, and then just 21 verses later claims that he does not come to bring peace, but a sword. Perhaps it matters who is bringing peace. There's only one Jesus, but I don't know about you. I don't have a count on how many disciples he has. He may have started with the original 12, but the movement didn't stop with just them. What if Jesus is reminding us that he can't be the only bringer of peace in the world? He is the source of our peace, but his peace cannot stop with only those who follow him. If we are truly disciples, ones who not only follow, but do, then we are ambassadors of Christ's peace, charged with bringing it to the world. Well, what then is Jesus's peace? Merriam-Webster defines peace as a state of tranquility or quiet, such as the absence of conflict or freedom from being disturbed or bothered by people, noise, etc. We know what that feels like, right? I expect we've all had times of trying to concentrate, only to be interrupted by the blare of sirens or the grating of lawn equipment or a cacophony of voices. And then, when the noise has passed, we welcome the sound of sheer silence that follows. Our nerves, which had been on high alert due to the noise, can calm and recalibrate. We can once again breathe fully and hear our thoughts. Now, I'm not knocking that sort of peace. In fact, I fight with a bird every single morning when I sit down at my desk. But I don't think it's the same as Jesus's peace. I invite you to take a moment now and think about a time when you have felt truly peaceful. Where were you? What did it feel like? If you're feeling brave, you can even close your eyes and let yourself experience that feeling again. Six years ago, the Owens crew trekked to the mountains of North Carolina, where we met up with the rest of my family. One morning, we woke before the sun rose and drove to the foot of Lookout Mountain. In that murky morning, made even dimmer due to the lush foliage of the trees, we carefully climbed our way up the mountain. At the top, we saw the sky change from the dusky blues and purples of early dawn into streaks of pink and coral as the sun crested the mountains. In the beauty of sunrise, in the silence of that morning, I knew peace. In those moments, I was connected to God, to my loved ones around me, and to the vast creation that I am but a small piece of. I was reminded of the words of the psalmist when they marveled, "When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars that you have established, what are humans that you are mindful of them, mortals that you care for them?" I knew my place in creation in those moments. One small piece, but an integral part of the whole. I haven't done a sunrise mountain climb since that morning 6 years ago, but there are many ways that we can know the peace Jesus talks about. I bet if I had a microphone to come out and ask you about your experiences, my hunch is that there would be a thread that connects them all in all the different ways that we find peace. That thread is connection. In fact, connection is what is at the heart of shalom, the Hebrew word for peace. According to the Bible Project, the most basic definition of shalom is complete or whole. Life is complex, full of moving parts, relationships, and situations. And when any of these is out of alignment or missing, your shalom breaks down. Your life is no longer whole. It needs to be restored. True peace requires taking what is broken and restoring it to wholeness. Whether it's our lives, our relationships, or our world. Peace comes when pieces connect. We find peace of mind in a decision when the final piece snaps into place. We know peace within our communities when we are connected, recognizing the integral part each person plays. We feel peace in the connection of a hug, a call, or even a card. Peace comes when pieces connect. But what about when they don't connect? What if the pieces that are supposed to fit together no longer integrate and connect us with one another and with God? Jesus says he comes with a sword, setting family members against one another, saying, whoever loves their family more than him is not worthy of him. It's easy to think that the pieces of family should connect automatically. And for many, they do. But for many, they do not. In the United States, we hear messages of idolatry of family, placing it above all else. Even today, on Father's Day, we acknowledge that it's a day of celebration for some, but a complicated and painful day for others. I wonder how often peace is declared, but the hard work of connection, of true shalom, has not happened. 2 days ago, we celebrated the Juneteenth holiday, commemorating the announcement of the Emancipation Proclamation to enslaved people in Galveston, Texas. There was an announcement of freedom and peace, sure. But aren't we today, more than 160 years later, still attempting to fit the pieces of freedom together into unified shalom for all people? As Reverend Megan reminded us in this week's Dean's Corner, whenever a society becomes more just, more compassionate, and more attentive to the dignity of those on the margins, all of us become more free. Friends, that is what true shalom looks like. And you know what? It might just take a sword to get there. Now, don't get me wrong, or get Jesus wrong for that matter. I'm not talking about waging war or using the sword on anyone but myself in a metaphorical way. But when I look out at our communities, when I survey our country, I do not see Jesus's shalom. Not even close. And just like Jesus instructs us to take the log out of our own eyes before removing the speck from our neighbor's, I am charged to look at my own self, my own piece of the puzzle, and ask where my freedoms prevent someone else's. The work of trimming and paring starts with myself and moves outward only once the next ring of pieces connect. I guess Jesus was right. He's not the bringer of peace. We are. And without his sword to trim away the parts of ourselves that prevent us from fully connecting to others, that peace might not be achieved. May we all be builders of shalom, piece by piece. Amen.